Hi, it's Radhika Jones, Editor-in-Chief of Vanity Fair. As we gear up for award season, there's no better time to join us. By becoming a Vanity Fair subscriber, you'll gain exclusive access to our in-depth coverage of film, television, and the best of Hollywood. And that's just the beginning. Vanity Fair takes you inside the worlds of entertainment, culture, politics, and scandal, bringing you iconic images, era-defining stories, and much more. Get 15% off a year of digital access to Vanity Fair by visiting vanityfair.com and using promo code POD15 at checkout. That's vanityfair.com, promo code POD15, for 15% off a full year of insights and exclusive digital access. Subscribe now.
Hello and welcome to Little Gold Men, the award season podcast from Vanity Fair.
It's such an honor to present this next award.
And here are the nominees.
And the Oscar goes to...
And the Oscar goes to...
And I can't deny the fact that you like me right now. You like me.
I'm the king of the world.
There's a mistake. Moonlight, you guys won Best Picture.
I am Katie Rich, and I'm here for today's interview episode with David Canfield.
Hi, Katie.
David, you got to talk to Rose Byrne, who I think has probably been anyone's favorite part of something. She has had such a long and varied career and tends to pop up in parts where you just make you say, oh, my God, how is she doing this? And in Physical, the Apple TV Plus series, she gets to, like, really take charge of something. Season 2 of Physical is out now. Is she just achieving new heights in this one?
She really is. One of the things that we talked about in the context of the show is she's been known to weave pretty effortlessly between comedy and drama. And this is a project that allows her to just completely take the reins of both, flipping between the two at a moment's notice. And I think leaving the viewer really off balance in a way where, you know, the show has been pretty polarizing and it's not everyone's cup of tea. It's very much mine. I think her performance at the center of it is pretty undeniable.
Did you guys talk about the arrival of Murray Bartlett in this new season? Because I'm very curious about that.
Did we ever? They have a really great scene that aired, I think, in last week's episode that dropped on Apple TV Plus that we talked about a little bit. And we also talked about this being a kind of career culmination for her in a lot of ways, going back to Marie Antoinette, which is one of my favorites of hers in terms of scene-stealing comic performances. And talking about being in projects that were maybe a little bit ahead of the curve, a little bit more, not mutedly received, but intensely received upon upon their entrance, and that are destined to sort of live a long and fruitful life in the culture. And I think that this is definitely one of them. It's a show that is so original and singular that I think it will continue to find new viewers over the years.
Well, I'm excited to hear about it. But first, let's hear a word from our sponsor.
Hi, I'm Lale Arakoglu, host of Women Who Travel. Each story from our guests and listeners is totally unique and utterly personal. We love hearing about your first impressions when visiting someplace new.
My first trip to the Patagonia region was on the Argentine side. I couldn't believe the expansive territory. It's like being in Tibet. The emptiness and the harshness really, I found transformative.
Or a story told when safely back on dry land.
You know, things happened every single day. I ran out of gas on a jet ski in the middle of the ocean. And I was like, what if a sea creature comes to eat me? But then I'm delusional. I was like, I'll make friends with it and it won't eat me. And maybe I'll ride that back to shore.
That's how it works. Join me, Lale Arakoglu, every week for more adventures on Women Who Travel, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Going into season two, which feels just as complex and thorny and sticky as the first, if not more so. And it's the first time you'd done a continuing series, right, since Damages. So what did that feel like to jump back in?
Jumping back in was actually really exciting because I was so thrilled with the script and with Annie, and I was really daunted and excited in the best possible way. And I just finished Mrs. America, and it felt sort of somewhat like a companion piece to that, weirdly, in a creative way, and it definitely in a chronological way historically. So I was excited, and working with Craig Gillespie, who, you know, is one of our producers, and he had, you know, directed the pilot of Physical. So it was a mixture of sort of excitement, fear. We were definitely covering new ground with this show, stuff I don't think I've seen personally represented on screen in the way that we do on the show. I've never seen as a viewer, so I felt when you're doing something like that, it does feel pretty nerve-wracking and daunting and thrilling all at the same time.
Yeah. I was a big fan of Damages, and that's another one that felt intense to watch, let alone, I imagine, make. Did that kind of experience, I guess, teach you, prepare you for another kind of psychologically demanding piece that you have to keep coming back to?
I think all of the work you do informs where you are right now, whether I'm doing Platonic or a play or Physical or whatever, or Mrs. America. You know, I feel like all of it is informative of where you are in that moment. But I mean, to answer your question though, technically there's nothing like a TV schedule. There just isn't. Yep. And so Damages was the hard and fast training ground for that. And particularly the way those writers worked, KZK was very much writing the night before or the night of that morning. So constant evolution and change. So that's a real muscle that you have to work at. And Glenn and I definitely became pretty good at that kind of learning of dialogue and assimilating it and trying to perform. And so all of that absolutely informs, you know, going headfirst into another series.
You're not surprised anymore by a long day or a quick rewrite.
No, but on Platonic, we've got like 9-page scenes and they're all like hard comedy scenes. And I'm like, wow, I haven't done this for a while. Like, is very much like what it was like on Neighbours or Getting with the Greek or Bridesmaids, you know, all the bigger comedies that I've done. It's like you do have these sort of long set pieces sometimes. And that's been interesting to embark on those again.
Yeah. Did you miss doing those? They are among my favorites of your work.
Yeah. No, I did. I do. It's again, it's a different muscle. It's just like a totally different muscle. So it's really fun to be back. And I love working with Seth and Nick. We have a really good teamwork in place.
Yeah. With Physical and the first season, as it started, you've got a character who feels extremely trapped. The word unlikable inevitably came up a lot in early coverage, both positively. I think people like that about the character and more critically. Yeah, you're shocked, right?
No, I'm taken aback.
Yeah, as it so often does, to your point, with complex stories centering on women. In this case, it's sort of baked into the show. I'm just curious, you know, your encounters with that kind of reception. I completely agree with what you said earlier, that this show explores a lot that really hasn't been covered on TV in this way before. And I do think that took some people aback a little bit.
I agree. The show, it can be polarizing. I think anything that's breaking new ground, and I say that in a humble way, but I like I said, I've never seen something like this represented on screen, and very stark and dark and, I think, humorous internal dialogue that we were also exposed to that everybody has. I mean, let's face it, we all have it. And it's just the human condition that we're trying to assimilate and condition and, you know, homogenize our thoughts to an extent. And so this is obviously Sheila is suffering and she has an illness, which is dictating this horrendous, you know, kind of prison she's in her thoughts. But yeah, I was so personally so drawn to the material. So you try as much as you can in this business to be intuitive about work and the choices you have and the choices you don't have. And for me, this was very easy. I was very drawn to it. Hmm.
Can you talk a little bit about getting particularly the voiceover right? Because it's such a fine line, I think, that from the very beginning the show walks and it kind of hits you really hard, in my opinion, in the best way. But I imagine there was a lot of working out some kinks and the exact voice of that.
It's very technical. It's something that's always in the scenes as we're shooting and we allow time for it. And I have a fantastic girl I work with, Kelly, who's doing the voiceovers for me whilst we're doing the scenes, if we need. But it's really the final layer of the whole show. It's sort of the last bit of texture that is constantly changing and tweaking, and whether it's Annie's notes or Stephanie Lang's notes or mine or the studios, are just tweaking stuff and figuring out the different beats of it, and also tracking where she's at with her with the illness. And it's something that we do really mainly in post-production, which I love. I'm one of those sort of weird actors that enjoy fixing the performance as much as you can in the end, in the edit and in the dark and tweaking things. And so, but it was definitely, it's definitely a work. It's always changing and evolving. Yeah.
How did you get to learn about that post-production process? I know this is your first TV EP in credit. You get to do that more now.
Yes. Yeah, I would love that. It's fun to have a seat at the table, you know, and have decisions in whether it's casting or costume or anything. It's fun to be a part of that. And it's always felt very easy to collaborate with Annie Wiseman. She's so much of a team player, and she's like the biggest cheerleader on set. And despite sometimes the nature of what we're doing, the set is actually very light and fun. It's a great group, and that's really hard workers. And Deirdre Friel is terrific, and all the cast, Rory and Della and Lou and everybody. So Paulie Sparks. So we have a lovely group. Yeah, it's one of those funny things when you're watching a show and you're like, gosh, I wonder what it's like behind this. Is that, what's the vibe like on set? But for us, we managed to, we're a good, it's a fun group.
Was there a project before this where you, obviously it couldn't be the same, not being an EP, but where you were able to be a little bit more involved in the project beyond the filming of it and see it through?
Sure. I produced a movie called Seriously Red, which we shot in Australia in 2020. We just premiered at the South by Southwest Festival in Austin.
Great wigs. That was
a whole new experience. which I, great fun wigs. And that, that was obviously like a tiny little indie film out of Australia that I produced through Dollhouse Pictures, my production company. So that was a whole new experience being on the other side of that and bringing that from the grassroots of just a little script that my best friend had written to finally taking it all the way to South by Southwest. So that was a great personal achievement for us to have done that.
This season in physical, as in last season, but I think more this time around, you get some pretty intense dramatic material to play. Stuff about Sheila's father and continuing to dig into the hauntings of her past to inform, our understanding of her illness and where she is. I know a good chunk of the show was not necessarily mapped out, but, you had an arc beyond that pilot when you signed on. I'm curious how the little details, though, of the character have built up for you as you've played her, and what involvement perhaps you've had in helping to shape that.
Well, I'm an actress of 1,000 questions. So every day I come in and I can see Annie's face, like, oh dear, here she comes. And I'm like, Annie, I just had a couple of questions. And then I'm off, and it's the same with it. I try to have that. Well, I just do. That's definitely part of the day-to-day experience of doing it, particularly when the narrative is so much centered around this protagonist and her, her kind of swimming through the ocean of life or whatever. It's such a cheesy metaphor, but I do come in always armored with 1,500 questions for Annie about where we're at, where we've been, where we're going, and that for me is always the best way to center and start every beat kind of thing. And then all of a sudden, of course, you have to throw everything out the window anyway. And, you can't make any decisions on anything until the other actor is in front of you.
Yeah. Well, speaking of other actors in front of you, Murray Bartlett, my God in this show. He's so funny.
Yes.
Your scene in his class in the episode of Sheila's Dad's Memorial is pretty incredible. And also wordless in terms of how, everywhere you have to go. Can you walk me through, using that as an example, the prep and filming of something like that? Just of the physical, not to throw a pun in there, requirements of a role like this.
That weirdly, because Sheila comes in unbeknownst to her, and Murray had been training with the dancers and his whole routine, obviously. Jennifer Hamilton is our choreographer on physical, and she's such an integral part of the team, and she's really the other half of Sheila. And so we work very closely together. But for that particular sequence, Sheila comes in and doesn't know what's going on. So it was somewhat easy in that I just had to physically sort of follow the follow what was happening. But obviously she has these sort of realizations and finally kind of lets her guard drop in the class because of, you know, she's started, you know, the grief of this death, this like, into which she has very complicated feelings around it because of the sort of, yeah, the trauma of her past and stuff. But it was really fun and funny. And in a way, very much what she was seeing was what Sheila was sort of being taken down the rabbit hole of the Vinnie Green experience was, yes. was so fun. And Murray is just such a delight. You know, he brought such humor and sort of soul underneath this bright, shiny kind of like poster boy for the wellness movement.
Yeah. One of the things that's great about continuing shows like this is you can have an actor like Murray come in and bring this whole new energy to a show that feels, you know, pretty established with lots of different characters. And it kind of disrupts the whole thing in the best way. I'm wondering if it felt like that on set.
It did. And we were so thrilled. You know, we didn't know if we were going to have him. And like everybody, I had just been so bowled over by his tour de force performance in The White Lotus. And
yes.
We were just thrilled. We couldn't believe it. And then he came and he's such a dreamboat. And he did disrupt and he did do all those things. And he sort of sets this bar for Sheila to try to achieve. And he's part mentor, part rival, mystery and intrigue kind of surrounding him. And we get another really great episode later in the season, which is even more sort of breaks all the rules of conventional television, which I'm excited for people to see.
Yeah, I think I've seen an advanced screen.
Okay, yeah, okay.
We're definitely cool. Not allowed to talk about it. But yes, something to look forward to.
Yeah.
More broadly, the way Sheila moves, finds herself through movement, it's a really fascinating way to unlock a character, I think both for viewers and for the actor. Physicality always comes with the job to an extent, but what has that process been like for you, in both in finding Sheila and maybe getting that kind of acting challenge, which does not come around too often, I would think.
No. The thing is, I'm deeply uncoordinated. I am not a natural dancer. I have two left feet. And so the training started early. And luckily, you know, Sheila starts out not confident, but she has a dance background. So just all those things that inform how somebody presents. Like a dancer is such a specific kind of character. You know immediately someone who used to be a dancer or was a dancer. And so just all of those informative things. And physicality, yeah, like I enjoy it so much. Personally, as an actress, it's such a fun and challenging thing. And this is not just physically about the aerobics, but how she sits in her physical body herself and how disconnected she is to it. So there's many layers.
Yeah.
But I feel spoilt, yeah, for the fun of it all.
Yeah, it makes me think of other roles that you've played where just the way the character carries herself might be a really big contributing factor. Bridesmaids feels like an obvious example in a way because she's so
regal,
controlled, yes. Regal,
regal lady,
not a piece of hair out of place, et cetera, yeah. Et cetera.
Yeah, it was fun doing Gloria Steinem because that was such a specific way
one.
She walked and spoke, and it's funny with those historical pieces when you're playing real people, it's like, some people just show up and you go, this is it, this is who I am. And other people perform in a very immersive way and are doing, you know, it's much more mounted. So it's that thing of how every actor calibrates that, right? When you're playing a real person. And so that I'd never really had that specific a challenge before. So that was really fun too. Yeah.
Which side did you lean toward? I feel like in that show, you kind of had a mix of the two approaches.
Yes. I found her, she's so striking and specific in her silhouette, from her voice to her body to her hair, everything. I just leaned in as much as I could.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we are talking on the day that Roe v. Wade has been officially overturned.
Yeah, we are. I'm not going to lie. It's been a crushing blow, I think. Listen, for every woman around the world, it's when America, the kind of... the leader of, you know, well, are we going to go down that road? Because it's so sad. It's just so, it's so much.
It's heavy. I know.
I did think of her. Yeah. I did. I read it and immediately was like, wow. Because like her, like every woman of that generation, they just fought so hard. They fought so hard to get these things in place. All the incremental things they did just built and built and built to finally pass these sort of fundamental rights. And it's a disturbing day. It's sad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The power of that show in a lot of ways was showing you the mechanisms to undo a lot of that work.
Though. Yes.
I mean,
wow.
You're
didn't
not
it
the
ever.
Primary in that show, right? It's Phyllis Schlafly.
It's Phyllis Schlafly. And what a fascinating example. Yeah, really reverse engineering how we got where we are today with the political parties and how they operate. And these giant conglomerates like Fox News or whoever who are, yeah. Anyway, but yeah.
Anyway. Streaming on Hulu for those
who want to rewatch. We digress. Yeah.
Sorry. Just kind of wash
no,
over
No, you're
just
right.
Now.
You know, I felt the same way. It's a very, very disturbing day.
Well, let's talk about comedy a little bit more. Let's
okay.
Let the mood. another one that I was thinking, another element of the show I was thinking of in the context of your overall work is the incredible costumes. And I know you've talked about the fittings being highly particular and
yes.
specific,
yes.
Which brought me back to a movie I very recently rewatched for no particular reason, Marie Antoinette, which you are
Ooh,
hilarious in that, by
yeah.
the way. And the costumes in that are insanely good.
Well, that was Milena Canonera, who's
yes.
like a, you know, sort of four-time Oscar winner.
And she won for the movie, yeah.
Yeah, she won for the film. But I remember wearing a costume that Marissa Berenson wore in Barry Lyndon. It was incredible, incredible
wow.
costume. Yeah, and she put me in that at one point. And yeah, it was like, yeah, that was every day. It was like, wow, this was just, talk about a special effect.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean,
yeah.
And it's also being a historical piece, obviously Mrs. America's dramatic series, but this you are hilarious. It's a really funny part.
It was funny. That was Sophia. Yeah, she really, I remember putting myself on tape and it was very light and bubbly. And, you know, Duchess de Polignac is obviously a real person in history. And but it was definitely one of my first opportunities to be funny, which was, yeah, due to Sophia seeing this tape, I guess, and thinking, okay, she looks like she could... It was the first time that it was more of a comic role, and it was very fun. It was very funny. And working with Jason Schwartzman, who's just a gifted comedic actor. And also there was a lot of improv on that film.
It felt like it, especially those big group scenes where everyone's just playing off each other.
We did. Jamie Dornan, who's still a dear friend.
Jamie Dornan,
Mary
yeah.
Nighy, Clementine Poidatz. A lot of the cast I still keep in touch with. And but I have very fond memories and very glamorous Parisian memories of filming in these extraordinary locations that only Sophia could ever possibly get access to. The whole thing felt very privileged.
I think now you are seen as someone who, as an actress, incredibly deft with comedy. But at the time, did you feel nervous about, you know, reading for, it felt like, I mean, even in the writing, it's a pretty broadly comic role.
Yeah.
And maybe shaking it up a little bit. I'm not sure exactly where you were career-wise in terms of comedy versus drama.
I think at that point I was probably nervous about every single part, like I am still now. So it was like still that daunting feeling of what was so fun was how she approached it. It was such a collaborative thing and she was very inspired by people, current sort of it girls like Kate Moss. I remember that was a great like reference point. And she, I think the film has really kind of become a cult hit now. Whereas when it came out, I think people were quite disoriented and didn't quite know, but boy, it was fun to make it.
Yeah.
We had as much fun as it looked like we were having.
I would hope so. And then you go, I think pretty quickly after that, went to do Damages, which was not funny.
Really?
I mean, here and there.
You know, it's
I feel like you were
satire.
Able to make Martin Short not be funny. And I mean that as a compliment, but... and not easy to do.
Oh, God. He's so funny. He made me laugh. I was laughing all the time. But yes, yeah. Then right after that was Damages. Yes. And that was really when TV was... It was the early days. Like, there were incredible, you know, HBO had set the bar with obviously Sopranos and Six Feet Under and Oz. And we came out the same year as Mad Men. Like, it was a real time that year that we came out. So I feel very sentimental about that now, I think, in a way. Because obviously you can't move for as many prestigious TV shows that are on. So that was definitely the beginning side of those things, of that era.
Yeah, I remember Damages, Breaking Bad, and Mad Men were all nominated for the first time that year. It was pretty wild.
Yeah, of course, Breaking Bad. Yeah, that's right. Yes. Yeah.
How does it feel then to be in a project like Physical, which I think has all of the dramatic and all of the comedic components that you would want in a part? I mean, as someone who has moved between the two pretty fluidly over the last few years, it seems to contain the whole package, if you will.
I felt that when I read it, and then when I met Annie and saw the sort of, you know, her keen, dry wit and how she just sees she can check the temperature in a room very quickly, and I think her writing just traffics in all of that sort of stuff in a way that I find very delightful and wicked and funny, and absolutely exploring the darker side, particularly of women and how we treat ourselves and talk about ourselves and think about ourselves. And it's uncomfortable stuff, but for me, it's, you know, like kind of fun to do, quote unquote. And and a show like this is so specific. And I've said this before too, wouldn't have been made 10 or 5 years ago. But now we have this ability to, you know, with streamers and I think also the desire for more stories from through a female lens and through the female experience. And that's definitely speaks to all of those things.
Mm-hmm. It's funny, the notion that it wouldn't be made 5 years ago, which seems undeniable. It's kind of true of a lot of the projects we've talked about.
Mrs. America,
I know. Damages, obviously.
Nope, absolutely. These are all shows that it's the timing like anything in life, and I felt like they found their home when they did at the right time. Yeah, which is, yeah.
Well, you did Damages for 5 years. Would you do this one for 5 years?
We did, that's right. It's such a collaboration between Annie and I and Steph Lang, our director. And so if we felt like there was more stories to tell, of course, but of course you don't also want to, we are all know when something has run its course too, but Sheila feels like to me a sort of endless, an endless character to be able to follow. And, you know, she's really such an incredible creation of Annie's that, it's one of those jobs that I sometimes miss even when I'm not doing it, even though that sounds sort of odd to say, but it is, she has so much agency, and in every scene there's just so many things. Like I say, I come in armed with 1,000 questions, so it's always exciting.
Yeah, I feel like she's a good character for that kind of way of working, because there's always a lot to ask.
Yes, exactly. Exactly, yeah.
Well, Rose Byrne, thank you so much.
Thanks, David. Thanks for your support. Thanks for having me this morning.
Pleasure. Physical on Apple TV Plus, an amazing episode that we tease coming up and seen.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
That does it for today's interview episode. We'll be back later this week with our regular episode and the conclusion of our Pride Month series. In the meantime, you can find us at vanityfair.com and on Twitter at LittleGoldMen. I'm at Katie Rich. David?
David Canfield, 97.
You can also sign up to text with us at joinsubtext.com/littlegoldmen or text 213-513-4203. Our editor and producer is Brett Fuchs.
Hi, I'm Lale Arakoglu, host of Women Who Travel. Each story from our guests and listeners is totally unique and utterly personal. We love hearing about your first impressions when visiting someplace new.
My first trip to the Patagonia region was on the Argentine side. I couldn't believe the expansive territory. It's like being in Tibet. The emptiness and the harshness really, I found transformative.
Or a story told when safely back on dry land.
you know, things happened every single day. I ran out of gas on a jet ski in the middle of the ocean. And I was like, what if a sea creature comes to eat me? But then I'm delusional. I was like, I'll make friends with it and it won't eat me. And maybe I'll ride that back to shore.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Join me, Lale Arakoglu, every week for more adventures on Women Who Travel, wherever you listen to your podcasts.